Hello, it is 3:30 a.m. in New York, 9:30 a.m. in Johannesburg, and 2:30 p.m. in Bangkok. Welcome to the Expat Happy Hour. This is Sunday Schneider Bean from SundayBean.com, and I am a solution-oriented coach and intercultural strategist for individuals and organizations. And I am on a mission to help you adapt and succeed when living abroad and get you through any life transition. G&Ts, sundowners, they are practically synonymous with expat life. And there is nothing like a good cocktail party to loosen you up and open you up when you're a newcomer to an already existing expat community. And I know in South Africa, the volume of wine I typically consumed unintentionally doubled, or maybe it even tripled when I landed here, because a glass of wine in South Africa is the equivalent of 3 deciliters in Switzerland, which was fun at first, but something that I quickly realized that I needed to adjust when I was having just a couple drinks with friends on a night out. So all fun aside, we all know that there is a downside to the frequent socializing and drinking that happens as expats. It can mean an impact on your health, like me when I realized that supersized glasses of wine were landing right on my thighs. And we've all witnessed relationships get destroyed from an unfortunate combination of boredom and a huge drop of inhibition, thanks to that third G&T. I've even seen expats in recovery from problem drinking explode into a debilitating case of alcoholism abroad. Happy hour doesn't always end in happy results. And this is why I welcomed Anik Ina to Expat Happy Hour today. Anik is the founder of Hello Universe and author of a forthcoming book called Soul Superstar, Stories from Sober Heart. She's a former retail business owner turned intuitive life coach. And she's originally from Mauritius, but she's now an expat in Italy. So she and I hopped on a call a few weeks ago after we found a common connection in a business group. And we hopped on the call for a totally different reason. And I realized, hey, this woman is on a mission. She is answering a call to help women step out of a cycle of shame, quit alcohol, and feel beautiful on the inside and out. And during our conversation, I realized, hey, she has a story to tell that could be really, really beneficial for some of the Expat Happy Hour listeners. So thank you for joining us, Anik.
Hi, Sunday. Thank you for having me.
And, you know, to be honest, I'm really excited to have you, but I was kind of hesitant to bring up this subject on the podcast. You know, I don't want anybody to be thinking that we're being prudish or shaming or even, you know, hypocritical. It is the expat happy hour for that matter. And, you know, I'm the first person to enjoy a really good homebrew or a pinotage with friends on a Friday night. So just, this is something that I had to overcome my own hesitations to share with our audience, because I think there are some huge taboos around talking about the downside of drinks and expat life.
Yes, in fact, that's something that I had to and I still have to deal with sometimes, because now that I'm not drinking, people think that because I say things, I'm judging them or anything. And I'm like, no, I was that person and I enjoyed my glass of wine after work or my G&Ts and my sundowners and everything. I mean, I don't drink. That doesn't mean that I'm demonizing alcohol or anything. I respect people's choices, and I don't say that in the patronizing way, you know, like, I respect you drinking, but I'm silently judging you. It's fine, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, I promised my listeners straight talk about expat life. And I noticed when I moved to Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, that my habits of having a drink with a friend at happy hour or in the evening, all of a sudden people around me were having, you know, barbecues. And then the first beer would be open at 11 a.m. And that's just not something I was used to. And I, no judgment there, because if people go to bed at 8 p.m., it's like starting the party just an hour earlier than some other people do. But it took me off guard in some ways. And then, you know, wholeheartedly participate once you get used to that. So tell our audience a little bit about your background and how you got to do what you do right now.
Well, it's been obviously based on my personal experience, because about 6 years ago, I myself became, funnily enough, I became an expat in my own country somehow, because I opened a business and therefore I moved back there, but I was living in a city that was majorly populated, let's say, with expats, and all my friends were expats, and I was living the expat life, you know, and doing everything that the expats do. And I know that from my small, quiet life that I was living to that kind of life, I started drinking a lot, not because, and I'm not saying, you know, that this is the fault of the expats, but it's just that basically when you are an expat, the way to make friends with people is around social activities that often include alcohol. And that's how I socialized with people, and that's how I made friends, and that's how my drinking became normal, and then a little bit questionable, and then definitely not good. And at the end of those 6 years, when I decided to move back to Italy, I was in that place where I knew I had started my life coach business, and I knew that there were a lot of people like me that had been in that place, that had been questioning their own drinking, but then didn't know how to deal with it, because, as you said, it's such a taboo subject, it's such a taboo topic, and the only reference people have so far is the AA. So
right, and that is a problem, because there's a huge spectrum that goes on there.
I know.
And I just want to jump in there, this idea of questioning your drinking. And I had this, a friend of mine when I was, right before I think I turned 30, one of my friends and I were talking, I said, yeah, I'm kind of thinking about having kids. I don't know if I should or not. And she said, Sunday, if you're thinking about having kids, you should have them, because just the fact that you're questioning it probably shows that you're getting the urge to have a family. And it's kind of the same with drinking. If you're questioning your drinking habits, maybe it's time to have a good look at them. Because if there might be something inside of you that goes, I don't know if this is serving me. And the thing is, there's no, like you said, there's no reference. AA is one thing. I have on my one side of my family, there's a legacy of alcoholism with several members of my family. So I am the first person to enjoy happy hour. And I do have something in the back of my mind which says you need to be mindful, because, you know, there is a genetic predisposition, as we know, a link to addiction and to alcoholism. So I am quite mindful of, don't take this for granted, you know, do keep mindfulness around consumption, because like anybody else, things can go, like you said, from normal to questionable to not good. And I imagine it must be really hard to correct once you're in the not good zone than when you're in the questionable zone. So if you don't mind, and I don't want to ask anything that makes you uncomfortable, but do you mind sharing something with us, share us a story where you kind of woke up and you thought, no, this has got to change. What happened for you?
Well, one, I was just going to say funny, but it's not really funny story, is that one day I was out and I was out, I had fun with my girlfriends, and I came home completely wasted. I got to bed, and then for some reason I decided I was going to say hi to my partner who didn't live with me. So I took my car and decided to drive to his place, which was 1 hour away. Mm. So, yeah, and I was completely wasted. And thank God I almost made it safe there. And I say almost because I drove for 50 minutes, I was fine. And then at some point I drove across a roundabout, like straight onto a roundabout. Mm. And instead of hitting the pole in the middle of the roundabout, I only hit it with my side mirror. Mm-hmm. And it didn't stop me. My tire burst from the impact. Mm. And but I kept driving. I kept driving. I took a wrong turn. And then my car ran out of gas at the same time. And I was there at 5 a.m. in the morning. I didn't know where I was. I had a flat tire. I had no gas. And I was completely wasted. Wow. And God, yeah.
Yeah, that's a low moment. That is definitely a low moment. And I mean, to put this in perspective for our listeners, you know, Anik is a functioning professional this moment, right? You're a functioning professional running your business. This is, you know, from the outside, this is the friend who you went out with and had fun with that night, who owns her own business and is functional. And not people don't know what happens when you get home or when you say goodnight. And this is part of my interest in taking this topic away from the shadows is that this stuff happens to people all over. I mean, we all know and love friends or fellow expats in our community who've had situations happen like this before. And but everybody, there's shame around talking about it, and it feels like a taboo. And it happens not to just that other guy. It happens to people that we know and we love. Or it could be happening to you if you're listening to this, you know, depending on what your story is. So, yes, so that was a low moment. So what made you, you know, if you do have a dependency on alcohol, that's not something you can easily turn around. How did you do that?
Well, that's the thing. You would believe that that's when I quit alcohol, but it isn't. I felt really horrible about myself, and that's the thing. When you get into events like that, when you get into incidents like that, you get a lot of shame, you get a lot of guilt, and unfortunately, the only way to deal with that shame is to drown it into another glass the week after or 2 weeks later, you know?
So you notice a cycle where this was repeated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you finally, so now I saw on one of your videos that you said you'd been alcohol free for 6 months. So how did you, and I don't know how long it's been since that was aired.
It was last year.
Last year. So that's, so congratulations for turning
Thank
that
you.
Around. How did you do that?
Well, it happened one morning. It's simple. There was no, it was not a hit, but a rock hit, but hit. God. It wasn't a hit rock but the moment.
Yeah.
It was actually a good thing. I went home, I woke up one morning and I couldn't remember how I had gotten back home. And I just realized that once again I had drunk driven back home, and I had actually made it safe. And I think this is what made me really get scared, because I had been at a friend's place the night before to catch up because I hadn't seen her for a while, and we had a glass of wine, and the glass became, actually, I learned later, 2 bottles. I had 2 bottles of wine that night. And I was in a mood where I said, oh, I'm not in an over-drinking mood. So I think this is what got me scared, because I realized that in the past, I kind of knew when I had a stressful week, when I had a shitty week, when I kind of knew when the evening was going to get out of control. But on that night, when I went to see my friend to catch up, to have a girl talk on her veranda, I just thought I was okay and I was in a relaxed mood and I was not in overdrinking mood. And yet I did overdrink and yet I did drunk drive again. Mm. And I made it home safe. And I thought, I'm not sure I'm going to get all those chances again. Mm-hmm. I was saved once again. My life was spared once again, and I don't want to keep playing with that until, you know, one day I don't make it.
Right, right.
And
that's...
yeah, I'm sorry. But that's when I really questioned my drinking. You might say, yeah, you should have been doing that before. But I think that's when I said, okay, this has got to change. And I was scared. I was scared that day. And all the people I spoke to told me I had to go to the AA. And I think this is an important thing, because even though that had happened, I still didn't identify with the AA. And I didn't want to go to one of those meetings. And I didn't feel like that would have helped me deal with the shame, especially because I felt that that would have just poured a whole truckload of more shame onto me.
Right. And I mean, so I think one of the things is, regardless of the situation, when someone is questioning whether the way that they're using alcohol to relieve stress or to participate in a social life, whether it's not serving you anymore. And your example is a very clear example, because you're putting your own life and actually other people's lives in danger.
Yeah.
But there are other people where it's not as extreme. You're not, you know, blasting through, roundabouts, but something is going on where it's not serving you anymore. So can you tell us what are some signs, not the extreme signs, because I think a lot of us can nail this extreme signs really easily. What are some of the subtle signs that happen when you're going from normal to questioning?
Well, I think that's what you said at the beginning. It's like if you happen to wake up, because I didn't go from not drinking to blasting through roundabouts just like that. There were different steps in between. And I think, as you said before, if you happen to wake up one morning and you ask yourself, you find yourself asking yourself or saying to yourself, I think I should cut down on my alcohol intake, or I know one of the telltale signs is if you go to Google and you Google things like am I an alcoholic, or what is the definition for an alcoholic, or when you start Googling things, or when you start questioning your alcohol consumption. And that doesn't mean you're drinking bottles or anything. You could be questioning your alcohol consumption even if you're drinking 2 glasses every time you go out. It doesn't matter how much you drink, because it's different for everyone. And as you said, Sunday, we all have this inner voice inside of us that will know. And if you wake up, or at some point in your life, you have this voice saying, maybe we should review that drinking behavior or the amount of alcohol you consume, then this is when you should actually take a minute and explore the topic and see why this is happening, why you are questioning yourself, because there is always a reason why.
Okay, and that makes total sense. So now we have this spectrum of everything's fine, to the sliding down into whatever speed that might be natural for people, to I really need help. And like we said, AA is one example. You know, it's a respected institution that has served thousands and thousands of people across the planet for serious drinking problems. And there are other people who are not clear candidates for AA. What? I know that you have a program called BYOB, Be Your Own Booze. And it's one way of supporting people who are struggling with alcohol. Can you tell us about your approach and who it's for?
Yeah, and my approach is for all those people who are in between the okay drinking and the extreme drinking, because mostly, you know, the AA deals with people who are physically dependent on alcohol, who have extreme dependence, who have withdrawal symptoms when they stop drinking, and it's like the extreme end of the spectrum. But there are people who can still go a week or two or 3 weeks or a month without drinking and are still okay, but then they will get to that point where they go out and drink and shit happens because they can't drink responsibly. And I'm saying that between quotes, because one of my dreams, I know, was always to drink responsibly, because I was looking around me and a lot of people were just having two or three drinks and they were okay. And I was the one who was always gone all the way. I couldn't just have two drinks. I would have a lot more and drink until I was drunk. And that's who my program is for. It's for those people who don't identify with the big A word, alcoholic, because there's a lot of stigma around that. And I don't call myself an alcoholic because I don't identify with that word. But I did have a drinking problem. I did have a problem with drinking. And
I know people like that. They're completely functional day after day. Even, you know, a normal pizza evening with a glass of wine. But then there are occasions when they do drink. It's like something happens between drink 2 and 3 or drink 3 and 4. And like a switch goes off and they just go overboard.
Yeah.
and end up doing things that they're not either remember or not really happy with. And I think there's some... How should I say it? There's danger in qualifying and saying these people are in this category and that category, because it's really not relevant.
Yeah.
What's relevant is what can you do that supports you and serves you? And so what is this idea of be your own booze?
Well, the idea behind this is that very often when we drink, the reason why some people can drink and some cannot drink responsibly is because we have some preconditions, let's say some conditions, underlying conditions that make it so that alcohol very often becomes a crutch. It becomes a tool that we use to fill certain functions. And very often it could be stress. A lot of the times it's stress, especially in the expat mm-hmm. life. We work a lot and we have a lot of goals and deadlines to meet and everything. And so at the end of the week, we're really stressed and we're looking for that thing that will
the release.
Be exactly. And yep. Very often that's alcohol. Alcohol is a great tool for that. But the only thing is that then we are so stressed that alcohol, we just end up feeling that, replacing that big chunk of stress with a big chunk of alcohol. And then
right. And then, then perpetuates a cycle because then you're tired.
Exactly.
And I mean, I know there's been times when I've been stressed where I'm like, oh, I really need, you can feel in your body like, ah. And the first thing you think of is like, oh, a glass of wine would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, but so would a walk or a bath. You know what I mean? There are alternatives. It's such an easy go-to, but there are other ways to decompress.
Exactly. And that's what BYOB is. It's be your own booze. It's being able to actually do life without having alcohol be a crutch. Alcohol mm-hmm. becomes just the extra thing that is just an extra. And so you are able to do life without having this need to fill a gap, to compensate or to anything. And it's basically because a lot of people also, and that's the thing, and that's my own experience. When I quit alcohol, I think that was the easiest part, you know, deciding that you don't want to drink. That's simple. You just stop saying yes to alcohol. But the hardest part, and I say hardest like in capital letters, is to learn to do life without running to that glass of alcohol every time. When you get stressed, when you have a challenge that comes up, when you get upset, you are just stuck with your feelings, with your stress, with everything, and alcohol is no more an option.
Right. So this is what I'm hearing you say is, if you've made the decision, this isn't working, this isn't serving me, you need strategies to reach out to replace the what you were doing. So the need is, I need to relax, I'm stressing to reduce stress. So then the strategy was alcohol. What are the new strategies? What are the three top strategies you've seen work in your life or the life of your clients?
Well, the one thing is sitting, learning to sit with whatever's happening inside of us and not running away. And that is hard. I'm not going to swear. I'm just going to say
hard as heck.
Funny. Exactly. Which is funny, yep. Because, you know, there's the, I don't really like the sober term, and we used AF, alcohol free.
Yep.
And I just love it because it's the acronym for AS, you know, AS. So, and it's learning to do life. So the first thing is learning to sit with all of those emotions, all of those feelings, and be able to process them, whether it is stress, anger, sadness, or frustration, or anything, and loneliness, because as an expat, very often you feel disconnected from your people, you feel this need for connection, and connection is another key word, because they say that the opposite of, it's Johan Hari who says that, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection.
Right, right.
And I just love that because it is so true. We often drink not because we want the alcohol, but because the whole drinking context is the connection. What we're looking for is the connection with the people around us. Yeah, go ahead.
And absolutely. I'm going to interrupt you here for a second, because for those people who haven't seen this research, or you haven't watched, there's a particular video I'm thinking of where they talk about the connections between addiction or dependency on alcohol and community, and how people's addiction, like active use of addictive substances or dependent substances, just spikes when you're not within a community. And when you have community, that a nourishing community, like a true community, and you don't feel, when you feel connected and you don't feel lonely, the use and the addiction factors plummet. So the remedy of dependency on many substances, in according to the research, I'm saying this very simply, right? Obviously, there's nuances in the research, but the remedy is community, that people holding you accountable. And I know that from expats, whether it's workaholism, alcoholism, or whatever the ism is, whatever the go-to coping strategy is, if they were embedded deeply into a community that knew them, loved them, and cared for them, they wouldn't be able to get away with that. People, you get away with more when you are in a new community and people don't know your past and people aren't holding you accountable, and aren't holding you up to your best self, because they're just meeting you. So I think that's a really important connection, that to absolutely not underestimate the importance of community and how we're all more vulnerable to going to poor strategies, regardless if it's over exercising or drinking too much or not eating enough or whatever the strategy is, we are much more vulnerable when we're not in community. So I'll leave in the notes for this podcast, I will leave a link to the video and to another podcast where I talked to Naomi Hadaway about the importance of community, because I think it's one remedy for developing a healthier relationship with yourself and with alcohol. Yes. So you've mentioned sitting with this, and that is not easy, you know, going through your own process.
No.
I assume your program helps people sit with that. I know there are other programs like AA or other programs of support or other professionals who can help you sit through that, because seeing yourself seeing yourself in the mirror, in the good, the bad, and the ugly is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just mentioned the importance of community and connection of community. And I think one of the quote-unquote mistakes and one of the differences, I think, between AA and my program is that very often when we quit drinking or when we think about what not drinking means, we think we have to stop going out with our friends and we have to stop hanging out with our people and we have to stop going to bars and everything. And that actually doesn't help. That makes us just more miserable. And quitting alcohol itself is challenging at the beginning. And if you cut yourself out from society, your friends, and your favorite activities, it just makes the whole process even harder. Right. And I know that the AA says you have to stop going, at least at the beginning, not go to people, to places where alcohol is served, not have events where alcohol is served and everything. And I say, you know what? That's the AA. I think you can do that. I go out. I used to live in a flat that had 70 bottles of wine and I don't know how many bottles of gin and everything. And I was fine. I think that's important that people learn, people know that they can have a normal life and they can keep their friends and their social circles and their favorite activities, even though they are not drinking. And that's what I teach them as well.
So I'm going to step in with my my caution hot coffee McDonald's disclaimer here that for anybody who's listening, you know, this, whatever we're talking about today on the podcast that's being shared is not to be construed for medical advice or replace consultation with a professional for your specific case, right? So I just want to put that out there.
Yeah.
And I think what the message that I'm taking away from what you've just shared is it's important to experiment that maybe an all or nothing approach doesn't serve you because it removes you from your community of your friends. Maybe for another individual, you realize that you're not in a place where you can keep yourself from your old patterns. So it really comes up to every individual. So I'm just wondering, is there a middle ground? Because, I mean, I know a ton of people, they're not problem drinkers. They do drink responsibly. I think I'm too old to not drink responsibly because after 2 years, I'm so tired, I have to go to bed. But is there a middle ground? People who are thinking, they're questioning the level of consumption or the intensity of consumption or the frequency of consumption or what happens when they do, right? So, they don't want to quit. It's not appealing at all. They want to be a responsible drinker. They want to drink socially on occasion and just alcohol-free, it doesn't feel appealing. What's the middle ground?
Well, that's the thing is that alcohol is just going to make you want more. And I know that in one of the books I read, it's called This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And I'm actually in talks with her. She's got her baby now. She just had a baby. But we're talking about collaborating on my program in July. Because she has this book that's really interesting. It's called This Naked Mind, Control Alcohol, where she gives one of these examples that I really love. It's the carnivorous plant where you have this small insect that feels attracted by the sweet fragrance of the plant. And it says, oh, I'm going to stop to have just one sip. And it goes there and it starts drinking. And it's good. It's the nectar of that plant is so delicious and it's drinking and it's like, okay, I'm going to go soon. Just one last sip. And then, you know, as it keeps saying this, just one last sip, it's slowly, slowly slipping into the bottom of the plant. And by the time, you know, it's ready to fly out, it's just drowned in the sea of other dead insects. All of those who were there before and who thought they could just have just one last sip, but then they fell down, they slid down. And that's the thing with alcohol very often, and I'm sure a lot of us can relate to that. We're gonna go out for one drink, we're gonna go out for two drinks, and drinking moderately is a challenge. And I'll tell you, it's more difficult to drink responsibly than to not drink at all.
Because once you start... That's really interesting. Yeah. I guess I wouldn't, that's not a perspective I would imagine. I mean, this is the interesting part of if you are not someone who naturally has drunk responsibly. I guess I'm hearing it from that perspective. If you're already a relatively responsible drinker, that might not be the case. But if you're the one who slips into the the carnivore, that might be a choice. So again, from the coaching perspective, I'm hearing you say it's something worth experimenting with. If you're the one who slips into that so quickly, it might not be as hard as you thought. And that's something also from a coaching perspective with my clients. A lot of the times they think a change is going to be harder than it actually is. But once they get experimenting with new strategies and see the positive impact in their life, they're surprised at actually how little time it took and how easy it was compared to how difficult it was. So
I know.
Very interesting.
Actually, yes, and that's why when people start, because I have two kinds of people coming from my program. Some people have already quit alcohol and they want the support to be able to do life normally, quote unquote, without alcohol. And there's the people who want to quit alcohol and they want that support as they are quitting. And what I say is that, you know, don't think about quitting forever. Just let's experiment together for 8 weeks. And then you'll be able to make that decision because, you know, it's the going without alcohol that's the most scary part. But once you start doing that, then you're free to decide. Maybe they go back to drinking, but even if they do, they will have a different relationship with alcohol. And maybe then they'll be okay to stick to that one glass. Who knows?
Right. So I think in summary, what I'm hearing is it's about, regardless of where people are on the spectrum, it's around shifting your relationship. And just to summarize, for those of you who are listening, I'm hearing, one, examine your relationship with alcohol, or could be other coping strategies, whether it's working too much or exercising too much or eating too much or not enough. Examine your strategies. Is it serving me? And then the second step is, let's examine the relationship I do have. And in this case, we're talking about alcohol. Is this relationship serving me? And then the third step is, how can I experiment with strategies, shift strategies, so that the relationship I have with alcohol in my life is more supportive, so that you can be the person you want to be at work, with your family, with your friends, and just for yourself. So interesting discussion with you today about being your own booze. Again, breaking a taboo around the sort of shadow side of alcohol consumption and how it can get out of hand, especially in you're an expat community, or you're seeking community and find it when you're always in a social setting. Of course, every expat community is different. Every expat varies in their preferences and their habits. So we're not putting everybody under one umbrella. The intention for today is simply encouraging anyone out there who feels like, yeah, maybe I should think about this a little bit, to say, you know, it's okay. And on the other side of that is a life full of new strategies that are more supportive of you. So thank you, Anik, for showing up today and for sharing your perspective on how people can change their relationship with
thank
themselves
you,
and with alcohol.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you. So for all the listeners out there, thanks for hanging with us today on this kind of taboo topic. I think it's nice to share, and I hope that today reached one of you. And if you have a friend that you know has been struggling please do share this with them, because it could be the one thing that helps them wake up the next day and go, you know what, I'm gonna change how things are, or slow things down for them so it's more supportive of them. You've been listening to Expat Happy Hour with Sunday Bean. Thank you for listening, everyone. I'm going to leave you with a little food for thought from Brandon Sanderson of the Alloy of Law. Once one becomes a man or a woman, he can and must make his own decisions. But I do offer warning, even a good thing can become destructive if taken to excess. And one of my personal favorite quotes is, no matter whether we're talking about alcohol or food or even work, remember, in the words of Oscar Wilde, everything in moderation, including moderation. All right, guys, thank you for being with us today. Get out there and live your life today in a way that serves you.